This time in the Planet Earth podcast, how do you predict flash floods? I'm Richard Hollingham, and I've come to the heart of rural Cornwall, where a team of scientists is investigating the formation of potentially devastating rainstorms. Dramatic weather events like the one that hit the Cornish coastal village of Boscastle on the 16th of August 2004. The downpour caused two rivers to burst their banks, releasing around 2 billion litres of water, which funneled through the small fishing community. The water washed away bridges, destroyed buildings, and swept cars out to sea.
There was something in the air. It might have been the smell. It's a job to know, but the noise as well. There was something different.
Graham King runs the Museum of Witchcraft in Boscastle Harbour. An auxiliary coast guard, he was the first to alert the authorities.
And we saw how high the river was, and there were trees flowing down it and things, and it was looking a bit worrying, bearing in mind the place was heaving with visitors. And we spotted a young woman, probably in her 20s, with a baby in her arms, standing on the slipway. Clearly a really dangerous position to be. It was at that point that I went and grabbed my uniform, went and had words with a woman, said it was just really not a sensible place to be with a baby. As I was speaking to her, you could see the situation was getting worse and worse, and so that's when I made that first call to the Coast Guard.
In the centre of the village, Jackie and Adrian witnessed events unfold.
The force of the water, it came down from the valley. And all I can say is people who were stood up by the cobweb said it was just like a thunderous crack. Because all of a sudden it was just like as though, I suppose in a way it must have looked like a tidal wave to them. And it just came down, and then you just had the river went up, which must have been, I don't know, 20 feet high. And here it was up to the second window over there, so that'll tell you how high it was.
One of the vivid memories I've got is the trees going down the river, vertical, as if they were still planted, but just going down with their roots in the water. You're watching the cars go bubbling around in the car park, helicopters hovering, and you're trying to point for the rain. It's now raining. Boscastle didn't have any rain that day. It was all further inland. So there's people trapped on the roof. It was one of those events it happens in slow motion. It's happening. You don't believe it's happening. You don't quite know what you're supposed to do.
After the water subsided, villagers had to deal with the aftermath.
Sewagey, gloopy, smelly, revolting. The whole situation was awful. You can see you've got no fresh water, no power, this horrible sewage-infested mud.
Remarkably, no one was killed at Boscastle, but it cost millions of pounds and years of work to repair the damage. So how do we prevent something like that happening again, or at least predict those sorts of events? Well, I'm joined by Alan Blythe and Lindsay Bennett from the National Centre for Atmospheric Science, who are spending the summer in Devon and Cornwall, working with colleagues from the Met Office and other universities on COPE, the Convective Precipitation Experiment. Alan, let's talk about the aim of this project. It's to better forecast this extreme rainfall.
Yes, that's right. We're trying to improve the forecasts to give people a bit more warning. So you can say, well, there's going to be a flash flood in this area, and allow people to respond to that. We're trying to study the clouds, and that will lead to improving the forecasts of flash flooding.
Now, the irony is today, it's completely blue sky. There are barely a wisp of cloud here. And we're in this is a disused airfield, or the end of a disused airfield, surrounded by a museum. So the various bits and pieces from the Second World War and other wars, but also your high-tech equipment.
Well, we're just using this. The person owning the museum has very kindly let us put our instruments here.
And you've got various instruments dotted around the site to make your measurements. There's a tower with gauges and wind station at the top, and you've got a white box on top of a container, and inside there you've got various instruments, and then behind us this rather curious array of what looks like horizontal fluorescent tubes, almost arranged like rollers, as if the rollers that go into those X-ray machines at airports.
That's a wind profiler. It measures the wind above us, the three dimensions. That tells us what's happening to the air motions.
And what other instruments have you got here?
We've got a container full of aerosol instruments that measures the sizes of the particles, the little particles, so not aerosol cans, you know, but dust and things like that. Those are important because they eventually go into the clouds.
And you've also got, when it is cloudy, you're going to have aircraft flying as well as part of this scientific campaign.
We've got three aircraft, actually. One of them's come all the way from Wyoming, the University of Wyoming. They're actually flying today. Even though it's blue sky, they've found some clouds over in Wales, so they're going to check those out. Hopefully they'll get some good data. There's the BA-146, the FAM aircraft. They're going to be flying through the clouds and measuring all the details of the particles, the winds, the thermodynamics, things like that.
So what is going on? What are you looking for? You're looking at very minute processes.
You'd think we'd know how ring forms. We do, actually. But it's all about the details of the physical processes. Where does ice form in the cloud? It doesn't form necessarily at 0 degrees. It takes an ice nucleus to cause a cloud drop to produce an ice crystal.
So this is water not freezing at zero.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so they're super cooled cloud droplets. Once you've got these ice particles, then they can grow and other cloud droplets collide into them and produce a thing called a graupel particle. It's very much like a hail particle, but much lighter and fluffier.
A graupel?
Graupel, that's right. It's a German word. So once these particles form, they fall eventually. Either they get heavy enough or the updraft ends. And when they get to the 0 degree level, they melt and become rain. So we know all that, but it's the rates of these processes. So we take a model and predict what's going to happen. And then we take observations. And taking the observations is really hard. It's really hard to get in the cloud at the right time, in the right clouds, when all of this is happening. And you can imagine, you're going through this hostile environment at 100 meters a second in an aircraft, making measurements of tiny particles with pretty sophisticated instruments.
To be honest, I'd rather not imagine that.
Well, it can be uncomfortable. It's a bit like a roller coaster ride.
Well, rather wisely, Lindsay, you're actually responsible for the radar on the ground when this is going on. And the whole point is to do all these measurements at once. So cloud comes over, maybe it's looking like it's starting to rain. You do all these measurements on the ground and in the air at the same time.
The aircraft are used to target the first particles that form in a cloud. The radar can't see cloud drops, raindrops, until they get to a certain size. So the aircraft penetrate the clouds and measuring in the clouds in the early stages. And then once the cloud gets too big, the aircraft might have to leave that cloud, but the radar can carry on scanning and watch the development of that cloud into a deeper storm and as the rain's falling out of the cloud.
We saw your radar dish, which is just nearby, actually in the shadow of the cheese factory, which I neglected to mention, which is right next door to us. And what is that actually doing? That's looking up.
The radar scans horizontally. It sees out to about 150 kilometres. And what that gives us is a whole picture, cross-section of the cloud, the whole volume of the cloud.
And how difficult is it to do this all at the same time, to make sure the aircraft's there in the right place, the radar's operating, all the other equipment you've got here is also taking readings?
It is quite difficult to just sort of target one particular cloud. So the plan with the aircraft is to go through several clouds and look at it more in what we call a statistical point of view. So it would be very difficult to just target one cloud as it's developing and scan that one cloud with the radar and with the aircraft. So we'll be scanning over a region and watching lots of different clouds as they grow.
Now, the storms you're looking at, Alan, are particular storms, convective storms. What does that mean?
You're probably familiar with convective heaters and radiators in your living room. The heat rises. That's convection. In the atmosphere, same thing. The heat rises, the heat from the ground ascends through the boundary layer and eventually forms clouds if it's the right conditions. And then that hot air rises. As long as the air is warmer than the environment, then the air will ascend. That produces cumulus clouds. So these clouds are cumulus clouds. Technically, when they get rain in them, they're called cumulonimbus clouds, and then they can become thunderstorms.
And is this a summer phenomenon, these sudden flash floods, these sudden storms?
Usually you get them in the summer because there's more heat, but not always. There have been some dramatic storms in the winter, but mainly in the summer, and that's why we're here in the summer.
So ultimately, though, this research, this campaign will make a difference?
We're very much hoping so. I mean, any comparison with the forecast models is needed, is really good. So we can only learn from this, and improvements will be made no matter what, really, just by having the data. Of course, that's as long as we do get rain.
You must be the only person in Cornwall who wants rain. Alan and Lindsay, thank you both. And we've taken some pictures of our recording today, which we'll put on our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter. And there's a feature written by Alan about the research, which you'll find at Planet Earth Online. And that's the Planet Earth podcast from the Natural Environment Research Council. I'm Richard Hollingham in a beautifully sunny Cornwall. Thanks for listening.